Time now to catch up with Jeff from Acela Wine. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Peter. Good morning to all our listeners.
Oh, nice to have you on board, mate.
Yeah, thanks. Nice and fresh morning here, Peter. We had our first frost today. And it's a little white down by the creek. Didn't get up as high as where the homestead is. But we were just chatting briefly off air, Peter, about how important that is for the quality of wine.
Yes,
in most of the major, or all of them, the major recognized grape areas in the world, you get frosts, because to produce really good wine, the vines need a dormancy period, Peter. They need a certain number of months where they're not doing anything, but just laying there waiting for better weather. I think we've talked previously about wines that are made in the north or down in places like Mexico. If you've ever been to Mexico, you know, it's, that's why they produce tequila, Peter, and drink it, because the wine is not much of a quality. There's a place in Southern California, big winery, huge vineyards, huge, cellar doors, called Temecula. It's dogleg from San Diego to Los Angeles. And if you go there and taste the wines, Peter, you would be very disappointed.
Really?
They don't have the dormancy, and so the vines grow all year round. So just before spring, you cut it all down and you pretend that you've pruned, you know, a dead vine off, but you're just cutting growing vines off, and then the vine will come in and it'll start again. But it's the reason why there are recognized wine areas in the world, Peter, because it has a combination of everything, and one of the most important is that climate that gets a frost, in the winter months. So there we are, Peter. We're there now.
I've learned something new again, which is good.
Yes. Well, it's a reason why a lot of areas, you can grow grapes nearly anywhere, and the grapes, table grapes, are not bad, in most of the world. But to make a wine grape grow and produce a quality wine is different. So anyway, Peter, here we are again, the ever-changing world of the coronavirus. Some interesting publications this morning, but in the medical journals, various ones. There was a publication just the other day came out of, and I will have a look, came out of Northwestern University in the United States, and they found that, and believe this, Donald Trump was actually right.
When he got up. Heavens to Murgatroyd, yes.
When he got up and said, at that infamous press conference of his, that, we should get more sun, he was right.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing he said about, trying using disinfectant wasn't all that bright, but they've published a study showing that people with the poor vitamin D levels are twice as likely to die of coronavirus.
Heavens.
So, yeah, vitamin D. And of course, we can't take vitamin D. I mean, our body doesn't absorb it. We get vitamin D from being exposed to the sun, Peter.
That's right.
Our body generates it. So old Donald was right when he said that we should get outside and get more light. And he was talking about artificial light as well. He was dead right. It cuts. According to this study, it could cut the mortality rate 50%, Peter. And it also shed some light on why children are not getting it. It's because they've found, Peter, that we're killing ourselves. Adults have a much more developed immune system, and it's our immune system, overactive immune system, something called cytokine storm, they call it. And it can severely damage lungs and lead to acute respiratory distress syndrome and death in patients. It's what seems to kill the majority of the coronavirus patients, not the destruction of the lungs by the virus itself. It's the complication from the misdirected fire from our own immune system, Peter. Children,
here we go again.
Yes, children don't have our sophisticated, we adults, our sophisticated level of the immune system. Children have a immune system that doesn't attack their lungs when they catch coronavirus. And that's why they're not catching it at the same levels and certainly not dying at the same levels, Peter, because their immune system has not sufficiently developed to develop this syndrome, this cytokine storm, they call it. So there we are. Our own immune system's killing us, Peter.
Well, yes, I can relate to that totally because mine is compromised. I already know that. But I remember an article come out, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, that said you should, the virus doesn't survive very well in the sun and in hot weather. So that was another thought too.
Well, of course, all viruses are like that, which is why, of course, flu comes in winter generally.
But right.
There was an interesting study about another one. This came out of Canada, and it just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. They found that latitude, which means colder and warmer weather, has very little correlation. They studied, you know, virtually every country and the actions that were taken, and they found that latitude didn't have a lot to do with the progression of the virus, and that would tend to mean temperature to an extent as well. And that didn't make a lot of sense. They did find a bit of a correlation with humidity, but I'd made up my mind not actually to talk about that because I think there's a lot more study required. But there is one more that I dug up, Peter, and this one is a no-brainer. People that smoke and have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, I'll get it right in a minute, mate, disease, which is COPD, have a 100%, almost 100% more likelihood of becoming critically ill with coronavirus. So if you're smoking, you're going to get it, and you're going to get it a lot worse.
Interesting, isn't it?
It is, yes. So anyway, that's on the medical front. But anyway, back on the political front, Peter, I had to laugh. Our premier, of course, is read somewhere not too long ago about she sacrificed her whole being and herself to be, you know, what we would classify as a political animal. She's not married and has no children, which is pretty obvious because of how she slaughtered everybody on Mother's Day. But she did all this, and she missed a political opportunity of a lifetime. Now, here's what she should have done, Peter. On Friday, instead of saying, oh, you can't visit your mother on Mother's Day, you know, one child can go at 10 o'clock, another one can go at 2, and another one can go at 4, she should have got up and announced, I'm waiving all family restrictions for Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Go and visit your mother and have a good time. And we'll review all our policies early next week because of the decreasing level or numbers of people that are getting the coronavirus. Now, that would have gained her a whole bunch of votes, Peter. What she did probably lost her 20% of her support.
Mm.
You know, so she's not really a political animal. She's just downright mean as far as I can see. You've got to look at the facts of what's happened. About 10 days ago, they eased the restriction on beaches. And, of course, they had hundreds of thousands of people down there. And then they put some restrictions back on, which we had always said they should do for the beaches. But you got to open them all at the same time. But you had all these hundreds of thousands of people milling around. She basically backhanded said any store can open by making the silliest possible political or at least guidance statement about who am I to tell a mother that requires new shoes for her child that that's not an essential services. Well, lady, you closed down shoe stores. Okay, so now shoe stores say, oh, gee, I can open. You know, so, and then about a couple wanting to buy a new bed, that's an essential service too if you need a new bed. Well, why don't you come out and say stores can open instead of those, you know, sort of silly comments. So, but
yeah.
Anyway, the reason I bring it up, Peter, is after you do those types of things and you ease everything, if you're going to have an outbreak of a coronavirus, it's going to be 5 to 10 days after that. Now, guess what happened 5 to 10 days after that, Peter? We're down to one case, two cases, three cases. So did it have an effect? No. Had no effect whatsoever. It had the opposite effect, because when she made those announcements, you know, we were running it in New South Wales at 6 and 8 and 9 and 7. Now we're running at 1 and 2 and 3. So even if we just stayed at 6 or 7 or 8, Peter, there's no change because of all that loosening of the coronavirus. And that's largely because almost nobody has it. There could be sleepers out there. But the thing is, Victoria has loosened more than we have, and they have way more cases. But those cases are primarily from an identified cluster, Peter, in their meatpacking plant or wherever it was. And it's not loose in the community. It's identified, it's controlled, it's isolated. And the Victorian Premier is at least smart enough to see that those are not random community cases. It doesn't affect the population. And so they've eased the restrictions more than New South Wales has. Does that make any sense? Since we don't virtually, you're more likely to win the lottery, Peter.
Yeah, I'll wear that.
You run out and buy a few tickets. You know, the odds of getting the coronavirus. Even Russia is undoing their lockdown. They got 10,000 cases plus a day, Peter, yeah. And they're starting to dismantle their lockdown. Once you get it to the point where you think you can control it, you know, it's a no-brainer. You know, we got such a budget hole here in Australia. Hundreds of billions will be years, 5, 10 years bailing ourselves out. And we're still locked down.
Yeah.
This restaurant business is a complete fiasco, Peter. This is what they should do with the restaurants. And we've talked about, look, allowing 10 people into a restaurant. What the heck's that going to do for a restaurant that seats 300 people? They won't open. It's silly. So what you do is, and this is an addition, we've talked about this many, many times. You have a restaurant, you divide it however you want down the middle, and you say, families, sit this side. They live together, Peter. Surely they can eat together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Families, there are people that live together this side, people that don't. So suppose you're 200 and you have 100 seats for families, and on the other side you have 100 seats where strangers are going to sit. So you say, okay, well, if I'm the government, I say, you know, okay, well, 50%. You can put 50% capacity in there, because some restaurants, you know, only seat 30 people. So 10 people in there is too many. Some restaurants, you know, seat 100 or 200. And then if you've got 100 in that area, you say you can operate at half capacity or a third capacity. What's wrong with that, Peter?
Yeah, nothing. You know, nothing.
Nothing. It's certainly not as close as jostling and shoving in Coles and Woolworths and the hardware store. Did you see the picture in the paper the other day? And I forget which store it was in, but it was wall-to-wall people. And, you know, so, I don't know. It's a selective punishment here. And that's why we have such an unemployment level. And the school thing, Peter, we've said it many, many times. It's a complete fiasco. There's enough research around to show that the community and children are safer in school than they are locked down or out of school, or especially now since they're no longer restricted to the house. They can go to the park, they can go to the beach, they can go everywhere. And so school is a much safer place to be. But they miss the boat. You know, I know the teachers' union is up and everything, but I would have just furloughed teachers above 40 years of age, Peter. They're the most vulnerable group. Say, look, you have the option of not coming back to school until, you know, a further date. School is open, but if you're an older teacher, it's not necessary to keep your seniority. It's not necessary to come back to school at this time. It seems like such an obvious thing when you think about it, Peter, about how to control the disease and how to look after those age populations like you and I, Peter, that are most vulnerable.
Yep, so, it's amazing. I don't understand.
It looks that it's so simple that why can't somebody, you know, come up with a half reasonable idea from government? They pay millions to their consultants, and they can't seem to get it right. When they opened the beaches, They opened three beaches, you know, maybe there's, I don't know, 30 or 50 beaches in Sydney, you know, from the right up north way down at Wollongong. They opened three beaches, and then they're surprised they get 300,000 people there, Peter.
Yeah,
you open them all together, you know, that doesn't happen. And we never pushed opening the beach, Peter. We pushed allowing the beaches to open for exercise, swimming, running, walking, not sunbaking, not opening the facilities, you know, although you have to open the toilets, I guess. But you can't, you know, you've got to control things. And, of course, they went right off sideways. And then they had to start controlling things, which is what they should have done right from the start. So
yeah, well, they shut the gate too late, didn't they?
Yeah, it's kind of like the horse is bolted, eh? Yeah. We'll just see if the gate works in case we ever catch him, Peter.
By the way, just hiking back to the cedar meat situation in Victoria, I noticed this morning that apparently it was being managed by another company because they run into financial difficulty in 2018. Aha! Yeah. So what's going on now?
Well, I don't know. Look, Peter, 90% of the companies in Australia, no, those that supply government and food to Safeway and Coles, I mean, Woolworths and Coles, aren't going to be in as much trouble. But 90% of the non-essential industry companies are in trouble, Peter.
Yeah.
You know? And for what? One case yesterday. I think there's one today, too, or two the day before. I mean, this is insane, Peter. You know, and coronavirus, like thousands of people die every year of the flu or complications of it. As I said, my sister-in-law just 2 weeks ago, Peter, she died of a respiratory problem, lung problem. You know, complicated, kind of a pneumonia that comes from this COPD we're talking about. But, you know, and there are thousands of people. I was just reading the other day, Peter. 140,000 people in the world died of snake bite last year, and 400,000 became critically ill or disfigured. So that's twice as many people that's affected coronavirus. But that happens every year. And the reason why I saw that article is that they've come up with a new system of treating snake bites in the field, Peter. You know, if you don't get with some of these really critical snake bites, if you don't get to hospital, you die. They now have found that the a chemical or a medicine they use to give to people that have had, I believe it's mercury poisoning, actually stops the progression of the venom and gives you plenty of time to get to hospital. So you can administer this medicine on site, like have it, you know, in remote areas to allow time for people to get to hospital. But that's half a million people, over half a million people a year, Peter.
So they don't make a big hoo-ha about that.
No, I think we got to get a little bit of perspective here. We're so far, so whacked out that I just have trouble understanding it, Peter, which we've said all the time. Once you know, once you have control of it and you can manage a cluster, that's all you've got to be able to do, manage a cluster. And that's what countries, intelligent countries, have figured it out. You know, we're not getting these random cases as much. We can track virtually every case. We can track down where it came from. If we can't, it's a cluster by itself. And then you've got to get those people. But it's a bit different, you know, like in Russia, you get 10,000 people a day. It's pretty hard identifying clusters, but they're unlocking. Most of Europe's unlocking. They figure, and they've still got 1,000 to 3,000 cases a day. The U.S. states are unlocking. You know, you cannot carry on pretending you've cured it. Like New Zealand, I think they had 3 cases yesterday. That's the same as 15 in Australia. You know, so, you know what? You can't shut down, Peter. They're not going to shut down. They're unlocking in New Zealand. They're not going to stop because they can identify where these people are coming from and deal with it. If you can't spend more billions on that, stop giving hundreds of billions of dollars away to 16, 17-year-old students and, you know, these programs that don't work anyway, but, You know, most of the money that the government's pumped into the economy has gone through coals and wars. I don't have a problem with it, but let's spend some money where it makes some sense, Peter. Testing, yeah, you know,
makes sense.
Control, virus police, you know. I mean, let's the app, I agree with the app. You know, but let's get it working. I don't think it's online yet.
Works. Apparently, it works reasonably well on Android phones, but they're having difficulty with iPhones.
Okay, maybe they got the coronavirus, the iPhone.
Matey, I tell you what, we'll get some people to spend some money. They just head to your website and get some beautiful wine.
Yeah, it's a cellar organic wine, Peter. It's a cellarwines.com.au. We can always, we're still in business. We're not allowed to open yet, Peter. That's how stupid this whole thing is. We're in an area up here where they don't even know how to spell coronavirus. And so we can still have people at the cellar door, but we can't let them taste. They can buy wine, but of course nobody comes because there's nobody up in the hunter, right?
It's looking that
but
way.
We're still delivering free delivery Australia-wide, Peter. No excuse not to have it on your shelf.
Sounds wonderful, mate. Lovely to catch up with you.
Yeah, and we'll catch up again a bit later.
Not a problem. Thanks very much, Jeff.
Okay, mate. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Jeff from A Cellar Wine. That's acellarwines.com.au.